9:30 a.m. KSDP Radio. This is Meet the People for November the 24th, 2009. I'm Kels Hetherington. My guest this morning is Terry Gardner. He is the former Speaker of the Alaska State House. Terry's current position is with the Small Business Majority, where he is National Policy Director. Well, with that introduction, a very good morning to you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
First of all, Terry, maybe you could tell our listeners what the Small Business Majority is.
Small Business Majority is an advocacy group for small businesses, which we mean all the self-employed business owners out there, like all the commercial fishermen and charter boat owners and realtors, people like that, as well as small employers up to 100 employees.
How many members do you have in Alaska?
Well, we're not a membership group. We're an advocacy group. And what we do to form our opinions is we do polls, as we did in Alaska, of scientific polls of small business owners, the full spectrum of them. So we don't just try to represent, say, one group of business owners or another, but just small business owners in general and their thoughts. So we poll small businesses state by state.
Well, the reason I wanted to have you on the radio to talk this morning is that the Small Business Majority is an organization that has been passionately behind the Senate's Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. Why is the Small Business Majority pushing so hard for this piece of legislation?
Well, we're pushing in general for health care reform because that, in all the polls we've done, national and state polls, that's the number one problem. And we're not the only organization that's discovered that, that when you ask small business, what's the business owners, what's the number one problem they have, and year after year, it's health care and the ever-rising cost of health care. So that's why we've been working on health care reform and why we're trying to support legislation that would be better than what we have now, which is just ever-rising health care costs year after year.
If the bill now being debated on the Senate floor passes, what would change about the way in which small businesses and business in general provides health care coverage to employees?
Well, for large businesses, not a lot would change because most large businesses, the largest ones, are self-insured now. So they, how they get their insurance wouldn't change much, but there would be a lot of new options open for small businesses. What is contemplated is creating a health insurance exchange, which creates a pool of small businesses, both self-employed and employers, and they would create a pool, and this would create a buying power for small businesses, similar to what very large businesses have, where they can negotiate with insurance companies. It would also encourage more insurance companies to offer. You know, Alaska's like many small and rural states where two companies dominate the market. Two companies in Alaska have 95% of the market. And that's one of the reasons Alaska has the highest health care premiums for small businesses of any state.
Yeah, now a point of contention in the debate that's going on in the Senate, I mean, there are many points of contention, but one in particular that even Democrats don't entirely agree on is this public option portion. The way you're talking about health care reform seems to me like you would not be for a public option whereby the government would be the insurance company. Is that correct?
We believe that the delivery system, you know, doctors, hospitals, nurses, should all be maintained in the private sector, as well as allowing insurance companies to continue to write insurance policies and compete. When we did do a poll in Alaska, and we did ask small businesses what they thought about this issue, and the majority of Alaska business owners said that they wanted to have an additional choice of a public insurance option. But I think by that they meant they wanted the choice. And they, but I don't think anybody, and the legislation now would a public insurance plan as it's currently proposed in the Senate bill, each state would have the right to decide whether they would have a public insurance option or not, because many states said they don't want it. So ultimately, I think it would be up to the people of each state with the Senate legislation to decide whether they have or don't have a public insurance option.
Now, the what is the feeling, the sentiment in the Alaska state legislature? Do your friends tell you back there that they would likely have a public option in Alaska, or is that something they would not do?
I haven't heard that anybody in the state legislature, you know, a majority say they want it. It is, as you pointed out, one of the controversies across the country. And to some extent, I think it's an overblown controversy. The Congressional Budget Office estimated that only 3 million people would use the public insurance option. Well, that's 1% of Americans. So, you know, I think both sides have been fighting over this issue, have kind of gotten the issue overblown. Whereas we think the health insurance exchange is really important, because this would mean that there's 22 million self-employed business owners in our country, and there's 6 million small businesses employing 43 million people. So small business, that's where half of Americans work, and it's even more so in Alaska. Even a greater percentage of Alaskans are either self-employed or work. And so having the exchange where you create more options and more competition for the business of small business owners is, we think, that's the really vital part.
Now, Alaska's two U.S. senators, Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich, voted differently on whether or not to bring the debate of health care reform to the Senate floor. Mark Begich voted to do it, to bring the debate to the Senate floor. But it's not clear whether he will support health care reform as it's presently proposed. What is your thoughts on that? Do you think that the senator will support it in the end, or is his vote not to be counted in the category of yes votes?
Well, I certainly can't speak for either Senator Begich or Senator Murkowski. What I do know is there are a lot of amendments going to be offered to the bill, and not only have Alaska's two senators, but many other senators from other states have said made public statements about they will or won't vote for the bill if certain amendments aren't in. So we expect several weeks of, you know, really robust debate, and many amendments are going to be offered. So I think, I don't think anybody can forecast how anybody's going to vote, because nobody knows which amendments are going to get adopted or not adopted, and many of these amendments could significantly change the bill. But, you know, that's the democratic process.
Now, are there any amendments that are very important for Alaska and that your organization has been in touch with Senator Mark Begich's offices about?
Yes, we're one of the provisions that is not in the bill that we've worked with both Senator Begich and Senator Murkowski is a tax equity for self-employed. You know, Alaska has lots of self-employed commercial fishermen, realtors, charter boat owners, contractors. It's like 60,000 self-employed Alaskans, and they are at a tax disadvantage. When they buy health insurance, they don't get to deduct it the same way that other companies do. And we think that's unfair and that they should have the same advantage. It would save them 15% of the cost of their insurance if they had the same tax deductibility. And we call it the tax equity for self-employed. And so we are, that amendment will be offered in the Senate, and we were hopeful that it would pass, and that would really be a lot of help to a lot of self-employed Alaskans as well as across the country.
Now, Terry, a lot of Native Alaskans qualify for Native health care services that are in large part free. One question that I have is, what would happen to this part of the population? would business be forced to pay for insurance for these people even though they already have insurance, assuming they didn't want the insurance in addition to the insurance they already had?
There's nothing in the legislation that I know of that would change status of healthcare for Alaska Natives or for employers. So there's not there. That's really just going to stay the same it is. I think they there are some provisions in the bill that the groups have been lobbying for to improve their services under the Indian Health Service, but the fundamental way it works is not going to change.
Looking at where healthcare reform has been tried already in the United States, in Massachusetts, the state government tried to provide universal healthcare coverage, and it has been an abysmal failure. What makes you think that the federal government can be more successful with healthcare reform than the state of Massachusetts?
Well, one thing is that everybody learned from the ways the state of Massachusetts did it is that they, while they were successful in expanding coverage, and they are the state that has the most people covered, they did not address the issue of cost containment. And I think everybody's learned from that, and there are significant changes in that are planned in the healthcare reform that would bring down the rate of inflation. And we, representing the interests of business, think that is really the crux of the issue. If you don't bring down the cost of healthcare inflation, you're never going to have a sustainable system.
Hmm. Well, that's my next question about healthcare inflation and a growing cost. Many in the business community are very concerned that the passage of healthcare reform will mean higher taxes, bigger government, and larger deficits. Why isn't the small business majority also concerned for the more than half of all Americans working in the private sector who either work for a small business or actually own a small business?
Well, the Congressional Budget Office has scored the bill before the Senate, and they have said, and they're a nonpartisan, unbiased group, they work for the Republicans and the Democrats, and they have said that the proposed Senate bill would reduce the deficit. We think that's a good starting point. There's additional measures, and we've certainly been working with a lot of senators, including Senator Begich and Senator Warner from Virginia, just to mention a few, about additional amendments to bend the curve. But, you know, what's going on with healthcare reform is there's a lot of people that receive the money, right, that we all pay for healthcare, doctors, hospitals, nurses, pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies. They all have a slice of the pie, and they all push back when we try to put through any reforms that would reduce their slice of the pie. But I think that's the tension we have over healthcare reform. Consumers and employers, we pay the bills, but everybody on the other end lives off the money we pay. There are provisions for going to an electronic medical system. There's provisions to reduce waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicare and Medicaid. There's provisions to increase prevention and screening, which would save money. And ultimately, we have to get people, 47 million uninsured, out of the emergency room where they're getting their care now, which is a very expensive way that all of us that pay for health insurance are ultimately paying for that, because the hospital just passes that cost on to us. So these are some of the cost controls that need to be addressed. Medical malpractice is another one that needs to be addressed. And that is in the House bill. There's not much. It's a very weak provision in the Senate bill, but there's a much stronger provision in the House bill, which we hope the Senate would also adopt.
Well, Terry, most healthcare expenses in a person's life come up at the very end. Does the small business majority support maybe not providing some of the very expensive procedures that older people in America are getting? Do you want to see those services cut back on to save money?
Well, you're talking about me now at my age. I'm almost in the pioneer's home now myself. So, of course, those decisions are really between the patient and the doctor. You know, and that's why we have to preserve a private health care system, so that doctors and patients are making those decisions in families as they are now. And that's what we have now, and that's what we need to keep.
So if the healthcare legislation gets changed so there is a public option and the legislation would mean an end to private healthcare as we know it, would it be safe to say that the small business majority would no longer be an advocate for this kind of healthcare reform?
No, we would not support a government-run healthcare. I mean, we know that that's not going to work. I mean, the government does run some things, and like fisheries and other things, where you know you can't just turn the fisheries over to the private sector. We know that, but I don't think it would work for to have a government-run healthcare system. You know, we have a privately run healthcare system now, and we need some reforms to it. We need some cost controls. We need to make sure that the small businesses have access to health insurance. In our poll in Alaska, only 21% of the small business owners that we polled are currently able to buy health insurance. And that's kind of a sad state of affairs.
So the genre of legislation that would have your support is a health care reform act that would require insurance companies to provide health insurance to people who work for small businesses. You would not support a public option like some would like to see in the Senate and the House of Representatives. That would be massive change. There are a couple of different options that have been tossed around. You are not for a radical change.
No. I don't think our country is prepared for radical change. You know, there's other bills that are before Congress, such as the Wyden-Bennett bill, you know, that would de-link health insurance from employers. And some economists, conservative economists and liberal economists really have supported that, saying why, you know, health insurance shouldn't be linked to employers. But I think that's too radical for employees and employers. We're all kind of used to the system we have now where we get health insurance through our employer. And I think that's what most people are comfortable with. Of course, it's a problem if you're self-employed, then where do you get it? And you're kind of at the mercy of the insurance companies. But remember, we're not trying to make the insurance companies cover anybody. But what we do want is to have more competition. You know, that's what we know works in America, is a robust private sector system. And having two companies, that's no good. I mean, I think, you know, we all know that whether it's, you know, buying gas or selling your fish, that you have to have a robust marketplace with more than two competitors. And we've got about 20 states that are just like Alaska where two companies dominate the insurance market. So the idea is to let them compete. We know that competition works in our economy. So we just need to set up the system so that there actually is competition.
So if there's no public option in the plan as you see it, or that you would advocate for, what do you do with the people who are not employed, who don't have any health care coverage?
Well, they have access to Medicaid, and that program would continue under the legislation for people that are unemployed and uninsured. They would have access to Medicaid.
Now, we're talking about people who are unemployed not by their own choice. They are looking for work and their benefits have expired. What do you do with that portion of the population?
Right now, you know, you can continue to buy the insurance from your past employer through COBRA. But the problem is usually when people, as you point out, when people are uninsured, now they don't have the money to pay for the premium. So there is a new premium subsidy program that is based on your income. So you would be able to get a sliding scale premium based on your income. Because even now, you know, let's say you're only making $8 an hour. Well, you might not be able to pay the full amount of your health coverage. You know, your employer pays some, but you got to pay some. So there is a sliding scale premium. You're still going to have to pay something, and it would be judged on your income. So that would also apply to somebody that was in between jobs.
So COBRA lasts a few months, and it actually has been extended. Congress has done that, and they've also provided some assistance to people who are unemployed for a more lengthy period than they had expected. Once the COBRA option disappears, what happens to people who remain unemployed, as you see it? What should happen to those people?
If we don't pass healthcare reform, there really isn't anything for those people. I mean, we don't have something in the current system. That's why we have 47 million uninsured. There's sort of people who fall through the cracks. So, you know, one-third of the self-employed are uninsured because their only options are very expensive insurance. And so they've made the choice that, you know, they can't afford it. So we have a lot of people sort of falling through the cracks. And a lot of it relates around the cost. And that's why in the health reform bill, all the different bills, they have different variations, but they have a premium assistance program that's based on a sliding scale. Because we still want, you know, to give people the incentive to work and to pay as much as they can. But if it's there is a sliding scale premium where they could get assistance to make it affordable, there's a depending on the bill, in the Senate bill, there's around 10%. If your health insurance costs you more than 10% of your income, then you can get a matching subsidy.
Hmm. Now, Alaska small businesses and self-employed people spent $318 million in healthcare premiums in 2008. And the small business majority is forecasting that that number will double by 2018 in the absence of reform. But Terry, what makes you think that the federal government won't also see an increasing cost providing coverage and administering all this new bureaucratic structure?
Well, actually, you know, we did a projection and it may be conservative because, and the reason I say that is the New York Times just published an article saying the average premium increase for small businesses this year is going to be 15%. Well, our study used a more conservative number, and we only used 9%. So, but we wanted to be conservative. We weren't trying to be scaremongers about it. Well, there's been several studies done by the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and the Lewin Group, among a few, and they have estimated that the health reform plan that's is before the Senate would reduce the rate of inflation. Now, we think that, you know, it's been watered down, as I pointed out to you, a lot of the lobby groups have watered down some of the cost containment provisions. So we're working to get more of those provisions in there. And we wouldn't support legislation that isn't going to improve on the status quo. I mean, because that's the whole point. We're trying to get health reform that would bring the cost down below the rate of inflation we have now.
Mm-hmm. And it's certainly riding above that rate of inflation as it currently is. 15% is a huge increase.
Yes, it's on, you know, some people, the New York Times article said, oh, well, maybe the insurance companies are taking advantage. They want to boost their premiums before reform goes through. Other people said, well, it was because the stock market crashed and, you know, their returns went down. I mean, we don't know. All we know is it's kind of shocking. And, you know, the thing for a small business to remember is, that 15% is just an average. Some businesses are getting 30, 40, 50% increases. It's very volatile for small business. And that's one of the important parts of reform is we're trying to deal with that instability that small businesses find. Now, large businesses, you know, they can negotiate more and they have a steadier decline. They're still suffering from increasing costs each year, too, but it's not as volatile as small businesses. Because one of the things that happens to small business, even if your population is of your company, say you have 8 employees and they're older this year because you had a change in your workforce, or somebody, God forbid, had cancer, your health status, well, they can just jack your rates for because you're in a small business, a very small group. And by going into the exchange and rating all the and creating a pool, we can average that out so each individual business doesn't have that big gyration every year, you know, which is similar to what larger businesses experience.
Curious, we just have a few more moments. We're talking with Terry Gardner. He is the former Speaker of the Alaska State House. He's currently the National Policy Director for the Small Business Majority. Terry, a question for you here. If this is such a good idea and businesses should get together, that are businesses that are entirely unrelated, so they can purchase health care at a reduced cost, why haven't they already done this?
Well, it's very complicated to do that, and there have been some pools created, you know, within a single industry, but they have been subject to several problems. One is they're too small, and they're also subject to what the accountants and actuaries would call adverse selection. You create a pool, and somebody that thinks that they have a lower than average risk drops out, and then pretty soon only the highest risk people are in the pool.
Mm.
So one of the ways you deal with that is create a large enough pool in the first place. For instance, Senator Baggage, Senator Murkowski, and Congressman Don Young belong to a large pool of 8 million people. That's how they get their health insurance. It's called the Federal Employees Health Benefits Plan. And they have a pool of 8 million people, and it's spread over all 50 states. So Senator Murkowski and Senator Baggage and Congressman Young can go to the federal exchange, and they pick which insurance plan they want. And, you know, and that's what we're trying to create for small business, except this pool of small businesses would actually be much bigger than the federal pool, which is why we believe it will be able to bring costs down. The Congressional Budget Office has estimated that self-employed could reduce their costs by 25% through the exchange versus no reform.
And now, President Obama, when he was campaigning and after he took office, promised that there'll be no tax increases for anyone making less than $250,000. Is that a realistic promise to have made? And do you see taxes being increased even for middle-class Americans?
Boy, that's beyond my pay grade. I'm just a little healthcare reform guy. I would say that it doesn't sound like any of those tax measures, given that we have a recession. It doesn't seem like any of those measures are too popular. I think the president has announced December 3rd he's having a jobs conference, and I think that's more indicative of where everybody in Congress is talking about the fact that the recession has not gone away. You know, that the recession is maybe better on Wall Street, but the unemployment rate keeps going up. And I think that's what seems to be dominating the political circles here in the Capitol now amongst Congress and the president, is what are they going to do about creating jobs?
But tax receipts are down across the country, both at the state level, at the municipal level, and on the federal level. So the government has to find some more revenue so they don't continue to run a larger and larger deficit. And I know the Congressional Budget Office has come out with a statement saying that the proposed health care reform would actually reduce spending and help reduce the deficit. Right now, the government's going to have to find some new source of revenue, and wouldn't you expect that they will have to introduce and impose some new taxes on people, even those making much more average wages who are members of the middle class?
Well, personally, I think the best way to boost government revenues is put 10 million Americans back to work. You know, I mean, you got to look to the future. And that's the real problem facing the country now, is the lack of jobs. And, you know, we don't want to auger downwards, we have to, you know, build up. And right now we've lost 10 million jobs in this recession. And that's the simplest way for the government to increase its revenues in a positive way. Every person that gets a job pays taxes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they not only pay taxes, but they spend money in the communities and, you know, pay sales tax or property tax, what have you. So, you know, the only way out of this deficit really is to grow out of it, and that means getting Americans back to work.
Well, thank you so much, Terry, for joining us on the radio this morning on 8:30 a.m. KSDP. I appreciate your thoughts and your wisdom here.
Okay, well, have a good day.
You too. Thanks. That was Terry Gardner. He is with the Small Business Majority, a group that is passionately advocating for healthcare reform. He was, a few years ago, the Speaker of the House in Alaska. We'll now go to NPR News from Washington, D.C. I'm Kels Hetherington. This has been Meet the People.
The U.S. economy's return to growth during the third quarter of this year was not as robust as originally thought. The government has revised its first estimate. NPR's